Right, welcome back, folks. Got Jack with us. It should be an interesting discussion. I'm going to do my countdown and we're going to go straight into it. So 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 942. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the future of the Freedom model in WordPress. We've got a friend of the show. He hasn't been on the show for a number of years, but I still classify him as a friend. We've got Jack Alturo with us. He's the founder of a very popular WordPress plugin called WP Fusion and a plugin shop called Very Good Plugins. So, Jack, do you want to give the tribe a quick 20, 30-second intro of you?
Yeah, sure. I've been developing in WordPress for about 15 years now. Wow. Yeah. Before this, I was an Infusionsoft consultant, and I did a lot of work with marketing automation tools, ClickFunnels and that kind of thing. And I started getting into WordPress the way a lot of people did, setting up sites for clients with pre-bought themes and customize it, put their logo in, and you know, just like
quick. Yeah, I think you've given us a quick intro. We'll delve more into your journey into WordPress after our quick commercial break. But also got my great co-host Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers, Kurt?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Vana Anen. I own an agency called Manana Nomas, and we focus largely on membership and learning websites, as well as working directly with folks at WP Tonic and Lifter LMS.
Like I say, in this episode, we're going to be just discussing the Freedom model. We're going to be discussing Jack's journey into WordPress. We're going to be discussing what the WordPress community is like in Germany, and a host of other topics. It should be a great discussion. Jack has a lot of knowledge to, and I think he's up for an honest discussion. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of the show, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks. 3, 2, 1. We're coming back, folks. Before we go into the first half of the show, I just want to point out we've got a created list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional, plus some great special offers from the major sponsors. You can get access to all these free goodies, and I know you like your free goodies, you WordPress professionals. You can get this by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals, and you find all the goodies there. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. Sorry to disappoint. So, Jack, let's go straight into it. So you gave us a quick intro. I cut you off because you were going off into detail. This is the time. So how did you, first of all, you know, get into the world of online marketing and becoming a consultant for Infusionsoft, or Confusionsoft, as I call it? And then how did you get into the world of WordPress as a developer, you know? So first of all, how did you get into the world of being a marketing consultant?
I found a job on Craigslist. I needed something to do, and I had no formal education, and somebody was offering, I think, $10 an hour as an administrative assistant in New Mexico, and they were using Infusionsoft, and so I started building all their campaigns and running their evergreen funnels and all that stuff, and I did that for 2 or 3 years.
And you still got all your hair.
Don't look in the back.
So, yeah. Well, that's humble beginnings. I want to point out I've worked with Jack on a couple of projects, and he's a very good programmer, and he's pretty easy to work with. Unlike some people I've worked with, that haven't, to be truthful about it. Jack has always been reasonable. So that's interesting beginning. So when did you start programming and getting into the world of WordPress as a programmer?
Yeah, the more sites you set up, there's always some client who wants something changed. This needs to be bigger. I want this to move over there. And if you want to get paid, you don't have a choice. So yeah, just a lot of trial and error. This was back in the day when it wasn't so competitive, and they feel like people were doing less outsourcing and they wanted to work with somebody in their local community. So yeah, just trial and error, and figured out as I went.
Right. And so you're totally self-taught?
Yep, totally self-taught.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'm amazed because, like I say, Jack's one of the better programmers that I've actually worked with. Is that because you probably are self-taught then, Jack?
And I just do a lot of self-teaching. I don't know what they say, that what's that 10,000 hours to mastery thing? I think I hit the 10,000 hours a few years ago, and I'm still racking them up. So I don't know. It's just new skills every year and incorporating them, and yeah.
So you're kind of freelancing as a developer. What led you into your first WordPress plugin and trying to build a business around that? What led to that?
Sure. I tried a couple of plugins. Around that time, I really enjoyed reading Pippin Williamson's blogs. He would do the year in review post. And that was really eye-opening to me. Like, you could make money while you sleep, and you could have thousands of people using your products and actually like really, really make money from it. So I tried a couple of plugins, freemium model also, that didn't work, and that's fine. But I kept coming back to these integration problems between clients who are using CRM software and also running membership sites. So for example, somebody who was doing their marketing in Infusionsoft and they were doing courses in LearnDash, and they wanted to trigger emails around student events. And like, somebody completes a course, they get an email, that kind of thing. So the same kind of problems kept coming up again and again. And I kind of built a toolkit that I would start to use for each project to kind of get it off the ground. And I was working with a friend at the time on a project like this. And he said, why don't we go in on this and we can release it as a plugin and see if anybody would be interested in buying it. And it worked. It was just the right idea at the right time. There wasn't really much out there for that level of integration. And this was right at the time when ActiveCampaign had just come out and marketing automation was just taking off. It was still affordable. Not so much anymore.
You got Fluent CRM, which, of course, wrote an excellent piece about your journey from ActiveCampaign to Fluent, didn't you?
Yeah, don't get me started on ActiveCampaign. I've got some thoughts there. But anyway, yeah, I think it was just good timing. And so we launched WFusion in the beginning of 2015. And it was basically 100% year-over-year growth for the first, 6 years, something like that. And we didn't release a free version at all. It was premium only from the beginning. And even then, I think the entry price point was something like $200. So it wasn't a cheap plugin by any means. People signed up and the word of mouth was good. And it took off, and it's still going really well.
Fantastic. Over to you, Kurt.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because now Pippin Williamson is one of my neighbors. We just moved to Kansas and I found out Pippin was here.
I see your pictures all the time at the brewery. Yeah, I'm jealous. Yeah. I want to go check it out.
You spend too much time in the brewery, Jack.
Kind of live at the brewery. So what do you think are, like, so your opinions, having released plugins and especially in the marketplace now that we're thinking of WordPress in the space, what do you think the real future is with like the freemium model of coming to market with a product, offering a version for free, and then trying to upsell or upgrade from that free model, you know, through the repository and stuff? Do you have thoughts around that ecosystem?
Yeah, I think that it's no longer possible just to release a free plugin and expect people to find it in the WordPress plugin list in the admin and build a business that way. You have to already have connections. You have to have a marketing strategy. I think the upfront costs are a lot higher, but I still think it's possible. I mean, Fluent CRM is a great example. They have a really powerful free plugin that can do a lot of stuff and can save you a ton of money. And their paid versions are reasonably priced and are a great value add on top of the free software.
Well, Joe is a great, he's been a great supporter of me. He's like you, very generous individual, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's great. He's kind of my WordCamp buddy. Every time we go to WordCamp, we hang out. So I think that it's possible, but you need to be established in the community already, and that could be as a podcast host, Jonathan. But you need to have some brand recognition and some trust. And then you need to release something that's solving a pain point and that gives away a lot for free. And that's difficult. I think we were really lucky in that we were profitable in the first month. And I don't think that would be possible anymore. I think you would need to expect to wait, 6 months or a year and build up a user base. But I think it still can be done for sure.
I've always been interested in the freemium model. And my first real experience with the freemium model was working with the folks at Lifter. Right. So they have this giant free plugin, right? And it does an amazing amount of stuff for free. And then of course people come along and they go, well, I want to sell it. Okay. Well, you want to make money with the product. So now we're going to ask you to buy a premium plugin to connect your thing. Right. That whole model made sense to me, but if I try to reverse engineer that thought as an outsider looking in, I really struggle with how do you determine what to put in your freemium version versus a premium, right? So after the fact, I can look at Lifter's model and go, oh, that makes perfect sense. But like, I couldn't imagine putting that together. Do you have thoughts on like how to construct the right freemium offer? And then like what's free and what's not? That's a hard thing.
Yeah, so I think that's a great example because, it used to be the standard was payment gateways or recurring payments if you want to take subscriptions. But a lot of people might not even try it out if they can't take payments. Like, you're not going to invest all your time into building a course. Like you want to have some proof that it's working and that you have a potential business there before you start to invest in paid add-ons. I think that in the last few years, it's changed quite a bit because of the Stripe Connect program. For people who don't know, if developers create, for example, like a simple course plugin that lets you sell courses, they can sign up via Stripe and they can collect 1 or 2% of all of the transactions that get processed through Stripe. So we're seeing more plugins that are released completely for free with payments and recurring payments built in. SureCart is a great example. And they're able to fund their growth by taking 1 to 2% of your revenue. And in most cases, that's the free plan. And then when you make enough revenue, you can upgrade to a paid license with the plugin provider, and then they get rid of the fees. So I think that's a great shift because it lets you start a new online store, validate your concept, and get revenue. If you don't make anything, then you don't pay anything. And if you start making a lot of money, then it's worthwhile to upgrade to the premium version and save yourself that percentage cut.
Nice. Jonathan?
Yeah, obviously, I think there's still some traction in this model. It's just got more competitive, like almost everything. But then you've got the elephant in the room. You've got the other element, which has always been there. But I think people decided to do a Freudian deal with the devil, didn't they? That's reared its head in more ugliness, partially through your own personal decision. But I think the more uglier aspect of this is what's happened around paid membership pro. Obviously, it's been reported in Reddit, so you have to take it for what it is. But I think also the owners of paid membership pro have confirmed this, is that they've been semi-threatened by Matt. that their decision to remove their parking from the depository, they got threatened that he was going to do what he has done to WP Engine and their plugins. I think the kind of feedback that I've got from the community over this, it's really put a shiver through a lot of people, and it's woken up a lot of people. Have you got any thoughts around this, Jack?
Yeah, I have a few.
I thought you might.
Yeah. So I'm quite close with the team at Paid Memberships Pro. I really think that I really respect that they kind of took a stand for their principles, and they said, essentially, Matt has not been clear with us with who is in charge of the .org repository.
Well, it is clear, isn't it?
It's clear now, yeah.
It's totally clear, isn't it?
It was sort of made out to be this, like a community supported collaborative place where people build the WordPress project together. And then when he stole Advanced Custom Fields, he said, "Oh, it's a one-time thing. That would never happen again. It's only because of this complicated legal reason that I can't really explain it the same way twice." And then to find out 2 weeks later, he's threatening other plugin authors with taking over their plugins. I think I get some leads from the .org repository, but I would be happy to close our plugin there and distribute it somewhere else. I don't feel
it's truthful. You weren't reliant that much on him and keeping on the right side of him. I say that he's quite capable of forking, I'm only stating the obvious. Obviously, and Jack's much more intelligent than me, audience. So he's thought of all this. Obviously, he could still attack you quite vigorously because he's done this before. He could still take your whole plugin and offer it for free, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could.
And he's quite capable of doing it, isn't he?
We were lucky in that we launched as a premium-only plugin. So as I'm sure you know, many plugins, their free version is on the repository, and then the paid extensions are add-ons to that. Like with Lifter LMS, if Matt took over Lifter LMS, the paying customers would be screwed. With us, our free plugin is standalone because we launched it much later. So if Matt wants to take it over and support it and develop it, when the customer clicks to upgrade, they're going to come through to our website and buy the premium plugin. So I really don't mind. It would save us some effort.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to be funny here, Jack, because the premier version is done under the open license. He could fork your premium if he wanted to. It would cause an enormous amount of bad will.
It would be a kind of
semi-nuclear explosion, wouldn't it?
This is why I filed my cease and desist against Automattic in October. He could take the plugin and completely rename it, rebrand it, change all of the functionality, rewrite all of the documentation, the tutorials, open partner programs with HubSpot and Salesforce, become a Microsoft certified developer, do everything. But he can't legally just take WP Fusion and sell it as WP Fusion because we own the trademarks to that. And that is trademark infringement. And we can take him to court for that.
Yeah.
So if he was really determined, he could fork it and call it, I don't know, Matt's Fusion or something. But it wouldn't be practical. It would be a lot of work. But I will say we're about to launch. I'm launching a new business, which is going to be a SaaS service, and it will have a WordPress plugin. We will submit it to the .org repository, but our primary distribution channel will be via our website. And that was made as a choice considering Matt's actions. We want to be secure in case anything else goes down on the .org repository. The updates will come from our website.
Yeah. In some ways, I think it's for the best to see the situation. I think a lot of people just went along with things because they were doing quite well financially and they just didn't want the aggro. But a lot of people I've not had this. I've always had a good experience with the couple of discussions I've had with Matt. but I've had a host of other people who haven't had very good interactions with him. But they've never been prepared to talk about in an honest way about their experiences with him. Would you agree with that, Jack?
From what I've heard, he has a public persona and then a private persona. I've heard in one-on-one meetings, he can be verbally abusive. He can be a difficult person to be around. And then he has his keynote face that he puts on, which looks good and is all about, you know, empowering writing and open source software. I think we're kind of getting a glimpse of that private Matt, especially in his social media exchanges. And in just like the weirdly vindictive actions, like the WP Engine Tracker website, or like this stuff that doesn't make any sense from a tactical or legal standpoint. It just really seems like he wants revenge, like he wants blood, and it pleases him somehow to get it. So I think people are starting to see that side of him that was previously only spoken about in private.
All right, back over to you, Kurt.
Okay, so if we go back to the
premium,
if we go back to the course at hand,
you asked.
let's talk about people that maybe want to get into the plug-in business, right? Yeah. So you've got experience here. You're well established, successful. We've got that. And what advice would you give to that service entrepreneur that wants to market their business in 2025? Because we're coming up on the end of 2024. Obviously, we've got some instability in the WordPress community framework kind of place. People aren't super secure. So if someone is already put in the work and now they've got something to release, what advice would you have for them to market that product in 2025?
That's a good question. I think the best way is to create kind of a niche product in a community where you're already established. For example, I'm quite active in the Buddy Boss community. My friend Peter's got a add-on that lets you customize the Buddy Boss app in very unique ways. And he came about that idea by spending tons of time working one-on-one with Buddy Boss app users and realizing this is something that they're missing. And he's already got the name recognition and I think is quite successful with that. I don't know how easy it would be to just wake up in the morning with a good plugin idea and, you know, just start tweeting about it. I think you have to have a community that you're already integrated with, identify a problem multiple people are having, and then even just develop it for one or two customers and work with them to iterate and then build it up into something that can be commercially viable.
Yeah. And at the risk of saying something maybe not expected, even an established plugin, right? You want to experiment with more content. Like, I know that you're working with Emily on making some like tutorials and short YouTube things. And so that's kind of a new channel for you guys, isn't it? To
yeah.
That perspective.
For 8 years, we did no marketing at all. I wrote one blog post a year that just summed up our revenue numbers, and our traffic kept going up. And then the Google algorithm update in April really killed us. Our traffic is down like 80% over last year. And we've seen that reflected in new customer numbers. Our new customer signups peaked in like 2022, and now they're at about half of what they used to be. Revenue is still going up because we have a pretty low churn rate. Most people renew. But so something had to change. So yeah, in August, I hired a marketing director full-time. Their name is Katie. And we now have two writers and Emily working with us on social media and video production. And it's a little bit early to tell, but we're seeing the organic traffic start to tick back up and our pages are ranking again. So it's been a really big change and a lot of work and just like systematizing a lot of things that were previously only in my head. Like, you know, why would somebody want to use event tracking or like you know, what's the deal stage in Zoho and that kind of thing. And so we started using Notion. I don't know if you know Notion.
Yep.
We're just creating this big database of all the internal policies. I record hour-long screencasts of this is how I do this specific thing, so that they know how to do it themselves. So it's been a lot of work. So with that, and then launching a new company, and then Black Friday coming up, I don't get much sleep these days. I'm really looking forward to the dead week between Christmas and New Year's this year.
Oh, I'm taking most of December off, actually. Well, I'm working. I'm in an enormous, I wouldn't say a fight, because that would be a ridiculous statement, but I'm in a similar situation with Google as what you expressed, but it's happened a lot later than what happened to you. So I'm going to have to do a ton of work, and a lot of that's got to be started in December. Just to finish off, I've got such mixed feelings about what has happened with Matt and WP Engine, because in some ways I know this is going to sound a ridiculous statement, Jack, but this is how I feel about it. In some ways, I think it's much about nothing, because everybody knew the situation. Anybody that had a brain knew the situation. Because he wants to get into a punch-up with an enormously well-funded, legally got a small legal army behind them, and then wants to do things that, in my opinion, aren't going to work out very well for him. That's his business, isn't it? When it comes to WordPress, which is a much bigger thing, isn't it? I was more concerned about Gutenberg and all the flux around that, because I thought it made things very difficult, not for you, because of the kind of plugin and your niche area, but for a lot of other plugin providers, the situation when it came to support and maintenance and making sure their plugin works, I thought because of Gutenberg and the whole situation, the situation was getting worse and worse for a lot of plugin authors and people with established business. Do you think I'm on the right track there?
Yeah. I mean, Gutenberg's been terrible for us. I can't stand it. I always say, up until WordCamp Europe 2019, when I saw Matt's keynote speech about learn JavaScript deeply, I had no idea who he was. I had no idea who Matt Mullenweg was. And those were my happiest years in WordPress. It was a stable system to build on. Everything was standardized. It was reliable. And then, yeah, he came in and decided, I guess, 28% of the internet isn't enough. We need to get 40%. And to do that, we're going to have to compete with Wix and Shopify and all these beginner website building platforms. And in doing that, they introduced a lot of complexity. And they also, some people went with Gutenberg, but other people decided, no, we're going to do our own custom JavaScript admin framework in Vue or something like that. Or Shurkart decided for stability, we're going to run most of the stuff on our servers. It's not even, you're like, your data isn't even in your website, because WordPress admin is about to break, and they move that all over to React. So I think, I don't know. It just feels, in both the case of Gutenberg and with WP Engine, it feels greedy. It's like, why does WordPress have to power the whole internet? I think it's at 43% right now. Like, isn't that enough? Like, could we just stay there? There's work for everybody. Does WP Engine really have to hand over millions of dollars of their revenue every month to continue to fund Matt's project to try to take over more of the internet? Like, yeah, I don't know. It really rubs me the wrong way.
All right, that's pretty clear views. we're gonna go for our break, and we'll be back in a few moments, folks, for the second half of this fantastic interview. I knew it was gonna be a great one. and it's turning out that way. We'll be back in a few moments, folks. Three, two, one. We're coming back, folks. It's been a great first half. I just want to point out that if you're looking for a great way to promote your plugin or WordPress service, why don't you look at sponsoring the WP Tonic Show? We've got some great packages, affordable packages. You can find more about sponsoring the WP Tonic Show and getting your plugin and service in front of a large and dedicated audience of WordPress professionals. You can do that by going over to wp-tonic.com/sponsorship. wp-tonic.com/sponsorship. And we'd love to work with you in 2025. Back over to you, Kurt.
Well, I got easy questions now. Well, maybe not so easy. I don't know. Living in Germany, and I was actually really impressed when I first met you at WordCamp, right? And I was like, oh, this guy lives in Germany. I was like, that is so cool. So being able to pick up and go, living in Germany for the years that you've been doing this, is there a big difference, you think, culturally in like WordPress here in the States and WordPress in Europe?
I'll be honest, I'm not super involved in the local community here. My German is not very good. And I kind of like to, I don't know, I keep my work life online and then my personal life stays personal. Most of my friends have no idea what I do. But I do think labor in Germany is a bit different in the US. Jobs are much more secure. After a 30-day probation period, when you start a new job, you basically have the job for life. And so with people I know
working, well, you used to, isn't that changing a little bit in Germany?
A little bit, but it's, you have a lot of protections. Yeah. And insurance is included and pension is included. Yeah. And you know, paid holiday, like it's all guaranteed. So in the US, I think I see a lot more people working multiple jobs, like, you know, day job, and then they're developing a plugin on the side or freelancing, and then they feel like that maybe that could work, and then they quit and they start a company, and then the company goes out of business and they start another one. And people are always like kind of trying out a new thing and maybe being a little bit more innovative. The people I know here who are working in tech, they go to work, they do great work, and then they go home and they don't think about it. They don't have to, you know, freelance after dinner to make ends meet. So it's just like work in general is less important. I know when I'm in the States, you meet somebody and they say, "Oh, hi, what's your name and what do you do?" We don't talk about that here. Many people I see all the time, I have no idea where they work. I prefer it that way. I think there are more interesting things about me than my job. So it suits my lifestyle, but it is a bit different.
Yeah, there's a big part of me that was jealous when I met you because I had just come off of a really great run with both Ducati as a company and a decent run at Suzuki. And I got to experience cultures, you know, obviously Asia, Japan and all that, mm-hmm. but I was still so enamored and in love with my trips to Italy and Spain and France and things I never would have got to experience without that job. And someday I plan on retiring, like just buy a vineyard and go to Italy and call it done. I mean, it just, their work.
That's my plan balance. Too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
their work-life balance. And like you said, their take on life and relationship is completely different than here in the States.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Jonathan.
Well, you touched on a couple of really interesting concepts there because I discussed this with other guests on the show, Jack, about the concept that there's a minority of people that are very active in WordPress and their whole reality of themselves and their social community is totally around WordPress. I'm very supportive of WordPress. Maybe the great leader would disagree with that, but I am. And it's been quite good to me. But I don't identify myself, my whole personality. I have friends that are totally outside of WordPress. I have people like yourself and other people that I have good relationships in WordPress and that have been generous to me, and I try and support them, but I don't identify myself solely around WordPress. I think a lot of these people that their whole life seems to be around Twitter and going to WordCamps and talking about WordPress and then talking about WordCamps, they've been some of the most shocked about this whole thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I was on the WP Product Talk show last week talking
about this. Yes, I listened to that. You traitor. You went on that before here, Jack.
I think it's a very small minority of us that make our whole income from WordPress, and especially those of us now, like we're a team of 12 people, so I'm supporting other people's families as well. And it makes me very nervous when these big changes are happening at the top and the community doesn't have a say in it. So for people like us, I think we're quite passionate about it. And then we do what we can on social media or on podcasts to try and make others aware of the problem. But I think there's a lot of people who it doesn't really affect them. They're still either selling their plugins or still getting clients. It'll just blow over, I think, for better or for worse.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. Obviously, some people that I well known and I do respect their opinion. I don't agree with everything that comes. They've got much more knowledge. I think Spencer Forum, who's a regular on my round table show that you work with on a reasonably regular level, he's been very vocal that, and he's got also a lot of legal experience, being that he's still he's not a practicing lawyer, but I think he's still, I've got the term, registered to practice in the law. He's been very virulent that, in his opinion, this is really going to be very painful for Matt and for Automattic. The outcome is bleak, but in some ways, but we just don't know, because I really don't wish Matt any, I get no joy about him getting into difficulty, because I don't get personal joy out of people that haven't done me any harm personally, but his actions really don't make any sense. But we're definitely in flux, but in the end, it could work out better for the WordPress community in some ways. It could go any direction. What I mean is, I don't think this means it's going to end up in gloom and doom in the end. Would you agree with that? We just don't know, do we?
Yeah, I agree. And change is good. My ideal outcome would be that Automattic gets hit with a huge fine and has to pay damages for everything they've done. And that could be hundreds of millions of dollars. And I firmly believe that there are investors behind Matt who, if they wanted to, could ask him to step down. They're kind of letting him on a long leash right now. But
he has publicly, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jake, but his last interview, I thought, which was very amazing, his interview at Disrupt, was that he's publicly stated that he personally owns 82% of Automattic, which he's verbally said that, but I find that amazing statement. I really don't understand how, after the kind of level of investment, that he can actually own 82% of Automattic. Do you?
I don't. And I feel like if there was evidence to that effect, he publishes everything. It says everything that's on his mind. We might have seen some of it, but I don't know. I can't comment on that. I do feel like Automattic is going to lose this case, and I think it's going to hurt them a lot. And I think that it's not a problem with Automattic, the company. I know some great people who work there. They put out high quality products and services. It's just Matt's that's the problem. And so my hope would be that if the repercussions are strong enough, Matt's power will become more limited. And I think that would be better for the future of WordPress.
Yeah, in some ways, I agree with you. I really don't. I'd be surprised that it ever gets to court myself, but who knows? I would imagine this is going to be settled. The only thing is, I'm not prepared. I don't wish any ill to WP Engine. Jason Cohen is, he's not a close friend, but I think he would be okay to say that we're friends. And as a founder of WP Engine, and like you, I totally respect him. And he's one of the, like yourself, a very great, you know, I always listen to his materials that come out. But I don't have a lot of personal engagement with WP Engine because of the people that own it. You know, it's just a business, isn't it, for WP Engine? It's owned by a venture capitalist.
Yeah, and
you know, it's business, isn't it? You know, they will just look at the figures, won't they?
And I, before this, I really don't like WP Engine's hosting. I think that it's overpriced and it's not very powerful, and they do a good job of attracting people who don't really understand hosting. But it's a business, and the business is working, and it makes them money, and they have every right to make money selling hosting. I never thought I would be on Twitter defending WP Engine, but when Matt comes after them, especially in a way that's not backed by any kind of like legal dispute, it's just Matt attacking them. He could do that to any of us, and so I feel like I have to stand up for them.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, I think that's well expressed. Back over to you, Kurt.
I really thought we were going to go for our half break. if we dial back the questions and wonder about, some people would look at WP Fusion and consider that a piece of AI, right? They would consider that like the automation, like someone fills out this, they get that. Someone does this, this happens. Someone does this. But AI's got a whole kind of different flow. How do you think you use AI in your daily life or in your work? That does it? Are there special tools that you use that help you get through?
Yeah, it's changed everything. I can't believe it's only been around a year. I would say in terms of coding, 90% of my output is AI generated now. Wow. I use ChatGPT for general inquiries or like, you know, how to approach a problem. But I've recently started using the cursor editor for code, which it lets the AI understand everything you're working on and work across multiple files and make changes. Just this morning, we had a customer who was using Zoho, and they're sending WooCommerce orders into Zoho for their sales team. And normally we interface with the Zoho Deals module, which is like one way of seeing orders. And
they're a funny company, aren't they?
Yeah, that's another story. Yeah,
that maybe we can discuss that. Oh, you're up. You know, we're coming up. We've got another 10 minutes, but if you're up for it, we can do some bonus content because they're a strange company, aren't they? They're highly successful, but they could do so much better, couldn't they? Yeah. In my opinion.
But I was just going to say the customer asked, would it be possible to send the data into sales orders instead of deals? And normally that's the kind of thing we would have to put into the queue, get 5 or 10 customers interested in, send it out to a developer, wait a month. And I just thought, let me just ask Cursor if it can do this, make a quick change. And it did it across like 6 different files, added a little option to the settings. When the option changes, it validates the different fields and makes sure they're mapped correctly. So 5 minutes, I was able to add this feature just for this one customer and send it out. So it's helping us do things that we probably never would have found the time to do because it's so niche, but now we're able to solve those problems for people.
Yeah. Do you think using the AI the way that you do, that there's a certain level of required expertise to understand the inputs and the outputs better? Or do you think overall, more and more people are going to think they're an expert in something when they really don't know what the heck they're doing?
Yeah.
That never stopped a load of people in WordPress. That's never stopped them anyway.
Well, and there's two ways to look at it. So the one is that, yes, certainly, like I understand how to phrase the question in a way that I get the result that I want. And I've pre-written a script that tells it, it needs to conform to the security standards and the translatability standards and the documentation standards. And but now I'm able to share that with our junior developers on our team and give them just like an hour training on how to work with the AI and the prompting. And they're able to output code at almost the same level I can. So I think that, yes, you need to know what you're doing, but it's also a great way for people who might have been too scared to even start to get their feet wet and realize it's not so scary. And yeah, you know, maybe it breaks the first couple of times, but you know, then you fix it and you learn more and you iterate. Whereas before you might've been too scared to ever start a plugin business. So I think it's good for established developers and for beginners.
Yeah, that's at the low level of engagement that our agency has here, we've run into a couple of times already where we've gone to work on a membership or a learning site and somebody's added some snippet or code or something. And I'm like, what is this? What are you like? Oh, I want my dashboard on the front end, or I want my reporting on the front end, or I want my, and in the old days you would say, well, let's get a developer to build that, right? Or let's move that. And now it's like, it's there. You go into this website and it's there and you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And oh, I just built that in ChatGPT. And you're like, oh my God, you know.
It's yeah, cool. I see where you're coming from, but that's, you know, it's just changed. But, you know, they hired somebody from somewhere. I'm not going to name or whatever. And, you know, it was 2 years ago and they never paid the person because they weren't happy or they fell out, as you do. So there's nobody to talk to anyway. Now the code is produced by machine code. It's a kind of same, but I see where you're coming from, Kurt, but I've dealt so much with that scenario. Somebody hired, there was never any documentation about anything, you know, and it's a black box, isn't it, Jack?
And it's changing so quickly. Like the system I'm using now has only been for about a month. And before that, the code we got out of ChatGPT wasn't that reliable. Like it wasn't really worth using a lot of times. And really, yeah, probably every 3 months, our AI integration workflow changes completely. And it's gotten exponentially better.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's awesome.
It's good to hear.
Right. Let's go to my last question, which is one of my favorite. Yeah, obviously, you know I'm English, don't you, Jack? So I mean, I'll be living in America, but I'm still so English, I feel. Funny enough, my family in the UK reckon I've become very Americanized. It's most strange. But I still think I'm pretty English in temperament and sarcasm. So Doctor Who and the TARDIS and H.G. Wells and the time machine. If you had your own time machine and you can go back to the beginning of your career, is there anything you would like to tell yourself apart from not coming on this podcast, Jack?
I love this podcast. it's a good question. I think in the beginning I'm very, very risk averse. I don't like to take chances. And so I wanted to do everything myself, and any money we made went into like my retirement savings, and that was it. We were at 90% profit for years and years and years. And it was fine, but I think I was worried.
It sounds pretty good to me.
Yes and no, but
all my money went to my divorce. I'm just trying to, so I don't end up on the street.
But I never got to take a holiday during that time. You know, I was kind of always at the whim of how many support tickets were in the inbox in the morning. And then in 2020, Ace joined us. He's our support lead. And I guess I was worried that bringing on help would mean I would have to spend more time in meetings and managing people and less time working on code. And that was kind of made me realize that, actually people can like take care of themselves and be responsible for their own tasks and do a great job in some cases better than what I can do. And so now that we're kind of scaling up and the division of labor is figured out, I actually have more time to spend, doing the things that interest me and less doing the stuff that I have to do. So I guess I just wish I'd got started on that earlier, building a team and investing more in the company. And I think we probably missed some opportunities along the way because it was just a full-time job, like keeping the fires from burning out of control. is something like, you know, Fluent CRM, the idea of launching a CRM inside of WordPress. I had that idea for years, but just never had time to do it. So yeah, I guess I would tell young Jack, don't be too afraid. Take chances. You know, you have to fail a few times to succeed.
Yeah, well, I'm a kind of perfectionist because I've got this. I'm a dyslexic, and the strange thing is, I'm a perfectionist, and that's a very difficult combination. And I, looking back, if I'd just been more acceptive, I would have done more things. But you know, that's just great, isn't it? It is what it is, isn't it, Jack? Mm-hmm. So we're coming to the end of the podcast. I think Jack's up to doing some bonus content, which you can watch the whole show on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. Please subscribe to that. Please support the podcast by subscribing to iTunes and sharing it on social media. We're one of the few continuous podcasts that are truly independent in the WordPress professional space. This is going to be our last podcast of 2024. I'm taking a break, and so is Kirk. I've got a ton of work to do. I was traveling, and I still haven't made my mind up about that. I am oscillating on that. But we'll see. But we will be back in the new year with some fabulous guests. Thank you for listening to the show. I want to personally wish you and your family a happy Christmas and a new year. It's going to be an interesting 2025 for WordPress, but don't get too worried because I still feel it's the best platform to build a real online business. I honestly believe that. So, Jack, what is the best way for people to find out more about you, your thoughts and insights, which I always read myself, Jack?
You can find me at WPFusion, all one word, .com. That's kind of where I blog about the business of running a WordPress company, and then also about marketing automation. And then I have a new project that we're launching at echo-.com, and that is going to be a real-time reporting tool for everything you do online, not just your WordPress website, but your Calendly events, your Stripe transactions. You can forward emails into it, and they'll appear there. So I'm really excited about that. I've been working on that the last few months. Echo Dash.
Yeah, they're really Jack, and I've known Jack for a long time, and he's just a great individual. I don't say that about many people, Jack. You can send me the check after the show, actually.
Yeah, we'll do. I'm the sponsor.
And he has to deal with Spencer on a regular basis. God, you must be
the highlight of my day.
You must be a fucking saint, actually, if you're dealing with him. Kirk, sorry, Spencer, but I had to say it. Kirk, how can people find out more about you, what you're up to?
On the agency side, it's Mañana No Más, like tomorrow no more. And we're there to help you with anything you need. And if you want to connect personally, I can usually be found on LinkedIn. I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn, so I'm easy to find.
And if you really want to support the show, why not also think about joining us on Facebook, folks? Yes, Facebook, I know. But join the Membership Machine Facebook group, and you can leave some comments about the show. I'd love to get some more feedback about subjects you would like us to cover. And the best way is to join that Facebook group. We will be back in the new year. Like I say, I want to wish you and your family a great Christmas and New Year. And thank you so much for your support during 2024. It's just gone so quick. Like I say, we'll be continuing the discussion with Jack, and you'll be able to see the bonus content on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. We see you in the new year. Bye.
Bye.
So some bonus content, you know, like I was saying, what's your views on Zoho? Because they're high, you know, based in India, private company, yeah, hugely profitable, you know, got some fantastic products, but got some really crappy products, got an arsenal of different stuff. You know, talk about a company that's got, in my opinion, got too many fingers in too many pies, but they've been enormously successful, though. So who am I to criticize them. Because their main product, which is Zolo CRM, that's been around for a number of years,
right?
Its integration with your own product compared to some is extremely frustrating, isn't it? But that's down to them rather than your great product, isn't it?
To be fair, I don't know much about how they work, but when I picture Zoho, I picture like an 8-story office tower with like 3,000 people working in it, and they're all working on separate things without any awareness of what the other person is doing. Yeah. And that's kind of the difficulty that we have, is that people see WP Fusion integrates with Zoho, and we do. We integrate with the CRM. And I mentioned earlier, you can send WooCommerce orders into deals. But Zoho also has Zoho Books, which is a separate API, different set of developers, separate website. And then they have Zoho Inventory, which does not connect to Books or to the CRM. And then today, somebody asked if we could support Zoho Campaigns, which is an automated campaign builder, but it can't use data from the CRM. It has its own API. And then there's also now Zoho Commerce. So these are all, Commerce, Inventory, Books, CRM, Campaigns, something else. And that's just in the marketing automation space. They've got calendar scheduling and all this stuff. So it's frustrating for me as a solution provider because, you know, we support Zoho CRM, but not the 100 other Zoho things that you might be using. They I think, are aware of this. They released a product a few years ago called Zoho Flow, which is like a Zapier, but just between Zoho products. So we can sometimes help folks send data into the CRM and then Zoho flow it over to Books to update their bookkeeping. It's been frustrating to work with.
Yeah, because it's extremely frustrating. They really aim at the small entrepreneur, small business between 50 to 100 people businesses. Don't they really have a focus around that? What's your thoughts about, you know, you publicly done some great posts about moving away from ActiveCampaign. Where do you see where they are in 2024? And a big giant did some amazing stuff, but really hasn't done too much for a while, really. That's my kind of, apart from putting their prices up quite a lot. What would you say about ActiveCampaign?
I still recommend it as one of the first places to look if you're new to marketing automation. But I think that they kind of made a mistake with the pricing changes because they were always kind of an entry-level product with entry-level support. Their availability isn't so good. Like, the system does go down sometimes. Emails don't send, the API times out. Like, it's got issues, but it was worth it for $60 a month and easy enough to use. But then when they raise the price to $250 a month, I've got customers who aren't getting tagged or emails that aren't going out, and I can't reach anybody on support to help me. For us, it just didn't really make sense to stay with them anymore. I feel like they maybe realized that they were having too many customers that they could properly support them. So the thought might be, let's triple prices. We'll kick out all of the people who aren't serious, and then we can put some real attention towards the, you know, like kind of enterprise level customers. I hear that it's getting better. They've opened a new support center in Panama, I think, and fully staffed. So they're making improvements, but for us, it wasn't fast enough.
No, so a company that's always amazed me, and then I found that it was actually a lot of their seed funding came from Google, I think I'm right, is HubSpot. It just an amazing success story, but I've never really worked out why. I only presume, even though they seem ridiculously expensive for what they offer compared to Salesforce, they're cheap. So if you're looking at Salesforce, you think you're getting a bargain of the year with HubSpot. I think, how would you react to what I've just said? Where do you think they're
going? Yeah, I agree. I love HubSpot. I wish I've thought.
Oh,
about
you it. Love it. You love
it. I love
them.
It. Yeah. I've thought about a future where we just work with HubSpot. They are expensive, but everything always works. The new features they release are well thought out. in terms of the developer experience, I have a number for a developer relations person that handles like a small group of developers. If I have any issue with the API, I can call them up. They can look at individual customer accounts and tell me what's going wrong. Fast responses. They're always in touch, keeping us informed on new features. It's been a wonderful experience to work with them.
All right.
You get what you pay for, I guess. You get what you pay for. I think their plans start at like $800 a month for the marketing automation features, but it just works. It always works. And if you need help, it's right there.
When it comes to the more traditional email newsletter like MailChimp, SendBlue, there's half a dozen of them. Especially MailChimp, when they got bought, I wasn't surprised that they haven't really done much because the company that bought them. But they were in difficulties anyway, I think, in dealing with marketing automation. Were you surprised? Have you been surprised? Because my impression with MailChimp, enormously profitable, but not really going anywhere, really. What's your own thoughts about that?
So for the longest time, MailChimp didn't have any kind of automation, really. You could send an email and then another one a couple of days later. And I want to say maybe 2 years ago, they added a workflow builder like you would see in ActiveCampaign.
I haven't dealt with them in donkey's years, though.
Yeah. I think they got a bad reputation as being only for when you're just getting started. And then as soon as you need automation, you need to switch to something else. But it's actually a pretty capable platform now. I've been impressed with the features they're adding. We don't have many customers who use it. I don't know why. I haven't had any problems with it, but it just
probably because they've got idiots like me spreading these legacy views in the actual situation. But they, if you go pear-shaped, you've got to deal with all this legacy, and you seem to be saying they have improved it. But they've got all this legacy stuff, haven't they, from people like me, haven't they?
Yeah. For Echo Dash, we actually went with MailJet, which is just a super basic, super cheap mailing list system, but it had what we need. I think we like $8 a month or something for 10,000 contacts, and it can do all of our transactional mail too from the app. So there's a different solution for everybody. If you talk to Uncle Spence, he can walk you through all your options.
He wouldn't give me any advice unless I was paying for it, Jack. I'm such a bastard. He's a smile, don't I? Now you got on the wrong side of me during the interview, actually, Jack. You know, your scandalous remarks, which are so common amongst developers around hosting. But I do see where you're coming because I'm a boutique hosting provider. But I'm a hybrid. I'm trying to add additional functionality. Is that when you've got a boutique hosting provider in a particular sector, which is membership, Buddy Boss, that kind of sector, learning management systems, we deal with a lot of support tickets. You know, because if they pay yearly on a starter plan, they're getting charged $35 a month. If they want to go month to month, it's $55. But we give them the email, generous marketing and transactional email limits. We set it all up.
Okay.
We provide them with a library of plugins that I bought the license, or people like you were generous and gave me a lifetime license. And we provide them really quality support, right, to a certain level. And, you know, we're not going to build a whole website for them because they're paying us $55 a month if they want to go month to month. But we provide specific templates that we've built ourselves upon Cadence.
Right, yep.
But you seem to say that that you think host. So we're on the premier side of what we charge. But we provide a lot of value. Kirk thinks we're ridiculously cheap. But you seem to suggest that hosting is ridiculously overpriced. And I see where you come from, because a lot of these hosting, they're pretty bad, aren't they? But on the other hand, I think you're taking out of context that, and also a lot of these hosting providers don't provide really good support. But if you are providing good support and that, it's got to show in what you're charging. Can you see where I'm coming from, or am I waffling?
Yeah, no, and I think, I mean, that's the argument for managed hosting, and I have no problem with managed hosting.
Yeah, but that's become totally discredited, that term, hasn't it? We say hosting plus because I didn't want to use the term managed hosting, WordPress managed hosting, because what does it mean now?
Maybe there's a better word for it, but I think a lot of customers like to know that if there's a problem, they can just talk to somebody and get the problem fixed and not, we manage our own hosting, but we have to spend time resetting permissions on the file system and updating system software.
You have this problem yourself with your plugin, because you do provide, you've always provided, my impression, really great support. Support at a ridiculous level sometimes. Where do you draw the line yourself? Or like I say, if we update a plugin, if they just got the basic hosting plan, we update all the plugins once a week. And if there's a problem, they have to self-report it. Mm-hmm. And if it looks like it's the plugins that we've supplied, we'll sort it out. If they want us to check over the website, have a staging site, they've got to pay for a Support Plus package. And if they're making money from their website, we don't tell them, but we through our communication with them, we make it clear that if they want a certain level of support, they're going to have to pay extra because they're making money from their website. How do you rationalize? Are there any clear boundaries in your own company where you won't go, or is it on an individual basis, that boundary?
There's almost no boundary. We do a lot for people.
Writing
custom code.
We fix
bugs in other people's plugins and then send that fix to the other company to let them know that they caused a problem. But I will say that as a developer, if we have the same issue come up in two tickets, that's a technical problem. Like, that's something that we need to solve. If somebody doesn't understand why their data isn't syncing in the right way, we can code a solution to that so that the plugin explains to them what's going wrong and how to fix it themselves. So I'm quite active about that and trying to get ahead of people ever having to contact us in the first place. And so we're actually, our support volume is lower than it's ever been.
It's good news.
So, and it's just like anytime a problem comes up, we try to find a way to avoid turning into a ticket.
Well, I suppose you're not a charity, are you? But I suppose the benefit is you want them to use your plugin. If they're not using the plugin in an active way, then they're going to, in the end, it will mean that they won't renew their subscription, will they?
And nobody wants to get some error message at 8 p.m. on a Friday and have to, you know, go find our contact form and where's their license key, fill it out, and then wait until Monday to get an answer or more. I mean, we reply to people next business day, which is faster than a lot of companies.
I know you do.
That experience is unpleasant. So anything that we can do to avoid that, whether it's writing more documentation or a lot of times we have lists of other plugins we know that cause issues with, for example, with LearnDash and their WooCommerce subscriptions add-on. We know bugs that are created by that plugin, and we have warnings in WP Fusion to let people know that that combination is going to cause them problems, even though it's not related to us at all, just because people reported it to us.
You think they would get that fixed, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know. maybe they will. But
they're pretty well funded, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right, there we go. All right. Where do you see marketing automation? You know, is everybody looking at everybody else? Because it's a difficult, because they've got AI. They've got this, you know, you're building by yourself, you know, you're looking at another product yourself. But am I right? I get the feeling that all the big players, they're all looking at one another. They're all developing in-house stuff. It's almost like when it comes to marketing and automation, I don't feel anybody, because it's been so quick in some ways, hasn't it?
Do you know Bento?
Yes, a
little bit. Jesse Hanley. I really like what they're doing over there. He and I talk a fair bit, and Jesse doesn't look at all at his competitors. He works one-on-one with customers, and when they have a problem, he solves them. And they've come up with some really clever stuff. Like, if you tag a customer as a new lead, they have a thing called tag decay, where that customer will decay out of the tag over time. Nobody else is doing that. He's got a system where instead of when you send an email campaign, it all hitting inboxes at once and possibly looking like spam to Gmail, it batches it up into batches of 100 emails and sends them every 30 minutes. So it looks more natural and you get less likely to be flagged. And he's not borrowing this from other people. He's just sitting down, talking a customer through their problem and then finding an original solution to it. So I really like talking to people who think like that and work like that instead of just like, oh, what's ActiveCampaign doing? Let's copy them.
What about how will WordPress cope with this? Because I think there's some structural, you know, the model of a page builder and a set of starter, and then you have these separate plugins. I think because of that model, I think it's hard to integrate AI in an effective way. So I really, the only way that can be countered, I'm really interested in your view on this because I've been thinking about it a lot, is a more kind of hybrid system where you provide a more integrated solution, but with the flexibility of the customer being able to use external plugins, but you provide a more niche and integrated solution that in the WordPress platform that enables you to do more effective stuff with AI. Is this making any sense to you, what I'm outlining?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know how much, like Elementor, I think, has an AI page builder, but I don't know how good AI is going to be at building your website. But
no, I think that's probably been overestimated, hasn't it?
But for example, with Echo Dash, it's a reporting tool, but our kind of unique value proposition with it is that you can send any data into it. And we use OpenAI to figure out the contents of your email or your webhook or your whatever, and summarize it into important points and metrics and then display those in charts. So if you want to send your Amazon shipping notification emails into it, it'll figure out when the package is arriving, what the tracking number is and what the order total is. And then it'll figure out all of your Amazon orders for the last month and show a chart with how much you've been spending. And that's been a really interesting application of AI because it's not really creative work. Like the AI is good at that. You can give it a big piece of text and say, tell me what's important about this. And it does it consistently and fast and cheap. So I think we might start seeing more AI integrated in that way. Like we're trying to solve the problem of if you're running a business, there's too much information coming at you all the time. How can we show you what's important and let you act on it when you need to? And
well, I think curation is going to be the biggest story
around
using AI, isn't it? Because I think when it comes to social media, news, what you've outlined, big word in the next couple of years is going to be
curation. If we're talking about keeping track of your business, take all those events and then have the AI summarize it into a daily report, and you can get an email to say, here's what's happened yesterday and here's what's important today, that kind of thing. So it's good at that kind of work. I don't think it's going to be building websites anytime soon.
Yeah, I always focus on Ben from Cadence WP. You know, I've got a lot of time for Ben because, you know, he seems a great guy. And when Stella bought him, you know, and it's just like my mind's gone blank. The founders of GiveWP, they're great guys, you know.
Oh, yeah. Devon and Matt, yeah.
Devon, you know, I'm very friendly with Devon. Yeah. He's always been very supportive of me.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, Ben, but I've not agreed with the way that they have tried to use AI in building websites. I understood why they were doing it, because I think having a great library of start themes, and also the great thing that's Cadence, they opened they enabled APIs functionality that enabled third party to build and sell starter themes themselves, mm-hmm. which is the great strength of Divi, which Divi understood. Even though I love the Divi people, the founder has never agreed to come on the podcast. He's made it clear he's got no interest ever coming on this show, which is fair enough. But I love the Divi people. I hate the product. You know, I despise the product. I've got to be honest with it. But they're lovely people. But he really knows. He built a fabulous business because he understood. He's one of the first. He really understood his user base, and he enabled third party people to build a whole platform based on Divi, and Cadence doing the same thing. But I don't agree with Cadence going down this AI that builds websites, because I don't really think, the starter websites do that really, don't they?
I think everybody thinks it's really cool and they want to play with it, and they're trying to find a way to put it in their tool. We use Affiliate WP for our affiliates.
Yeah.
And I noticed the other day when I get a new affiliate application, it says the name of the person and their reasons for joining our affiliate program. And I can either say accept or reject. And now they've added a button that says review affiliate with AI. Like, it's like, you know, Jonathan Den with WP Tonic, I'm going to write about you on my blog. And I'm like that unsure about it, that I need to send it out to ChatGPT and get a robot assessment. I can just see somebody being like, we need to integrate AI in this product in some way. How about
well, there is generally a ton of that, isn't there?
But I think like once the initial hype wears off, I'm sure there are applications for it inside of WordPress for managing data that we haven't thought of. I would love to see an AI solution for writing alt text for my images for accessibility. Oh. I've heard some people working on one, but I haven't seen one I like yet.
Well, that's a big area, isn't it? Because accessibility has been terrible in WordPress.
And that's a thing that like I have to do manually.
Another area which it's just been a disaster with Gutenberg, hasn't it? It wasn't that great anyway. And then they put a ton of stuff on top. And the funny thing with Gutenberg is, you know, you were much stronger in your criticism. I always thought I could understand why he wanted to do it, because the editing experience with native WordPress was a joke. But I think it should have just been kept in a plugin. But I think that decision to put it in core was totally commercially driven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I use Cadence because it's under Ben's control. So I really started to like using Cadence, and I use Beaver Builder and I use a bit of Animator. But I've really got to like Cadence.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to go down, expose myself to full site editing and the constant changes that they're going through.
It's always breaking. Yeah.
I just can't deal with that, and nor can I recommend it to clients.
Well, and for example, the WooCommerce product editor is about to be changed to Blocks, and we have a pretty close integration with that, with WP Fusion. And I met with Stephanie Pai, who's leading that project at WordCamp Asia in February. And I said, you know, we're a little bit worried because you're going to change all this interface and you haven't added any backwards compatibility. So one day, you know, our customers are going to update and it's just going to be missing. And the response was like, the future is coming. Get used to it. Like, we don't care. If you don't want to update your to integrate with our super complex React driven block system, then you're just out of luck. I just don't like it. It feels really hostile to the developer community and to people who spent like a lot of time. You know, people choose WooCommerce because we provide this functionality. And now WooCommerce is saying, we're going to break all that and we don't really care.
Oh, right. Oh, I bet that was a joyous moment, wasn't it? Right. I think we're going to wrap it up. You've been generous with your time, and you must come back in the new year sometime. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I think we've covered a ton of stuff. We're going to end it now, folks. We'll see you in the new year. See you soon, folks. Right. Bye.
Thanks, Jonathan.